This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here, Money, Riches, and Wealth, with Christopher John O'Shea. Chris?
Andrew?
2 weeks in a row, man, I'll tell you.
You're a blessed individual.
I guess so. And 2 weeks in a row,
so
we're doing an open show. We're
just
going to take our callers' questions and whatever they want to talk about, they get to direct the conversation tonight.
Yeah, last week it took about 10 minutes before people started, but then it was continuous after that.
Yep. So if you want to call in, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680, if you want to direct the conversation tonight, and that's the way you do it. Call in, and we'll get to your question as soon as we get to the order that they come in. So 410-922-6680 if you want to call in and ask a question. Tomorrow we're doing our tax webinar, and we're talking about the Tax Act and Job Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, and we're going to lay out just some of the the principles that are going to be happening in this, some of the strategies you ought to use for like 15, 20 minutes maybe at the most, and then we're going to just open it up to questions. If there are questions, we'll go as long as those questions last. If there aren't many questions, we'll wrap up in, you know, less than a half an hour. If you want to register for that, I don't know if you still can, to tell you the truth, but I'm going to guess you can. It's on the Financial Consulate Facebook page.
Right.
You just go to Financial Consulate Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn. I think that, though, it's the Facebook page is the main page to go to sign up for the seminar. But there's a new one coming out. It's going to be a three-part series. It's going to start in the middle of February, February 15th. It'll also be a lunchtime seminar, but this time it's going to be focused on technology, using technology to enhance your financial well-being. How do you, do you use checking account software? Do you use
cash flow tracking software?
Do you use portfolio software? Do you use the investment new issues and startup companies and all kinds of, there's so many. I can't even begin to talk about all the different technology apps that are out there. And, myself and my team use a lot of them, and they're critical. And then there's a lot of technology that we use with our clients, like Money Guide Pro and the InvestNet portal and the net worth model and the cash flow model. There's all kinds of things that we do with our clients. We're going to talk about those, but we're going to talk about a lot of general ones that you can do regardless. If you want to sign up for that, again, the Facebook, the Financial Consulate page on Facebook is the way to register for that seminar. If you want to do that, and it's open to anyone, because we can put on thousands of people into that webinar. I think we have over 100 for the tech seminar. And next month, February 15th, will be the tech webinar. But let's go to John in Cadenceville because he wants to ask a question about Bitcoin. What can we help you with, John?
My investment counselor invested in Bitcoin a long time ago.
Okay.
I don't know if I ever recovered any losses or gains. It's hard for me to figure out how that works.
Well, did you put money in it, you're saying?
No.
No.
No. But the way my investment works is my investor puts money in his account the same way I do mine.
Okay.
And if so, how did we benefit? I can't really figure that out.
I'm not sure what John's
You're saying
asking.
That as he's in what he's investing in, he's putting some of that in your account?
He was playing with it a long time ago.
Sure.
He bought one, two, ten, who knows, at $23.
Right.
So the day they were $10, this week they were $20. I just don't understand the whole thing.
Yeah, well, Bitcoin's a hard thing to understand, and basically what you have is a theoretical virtual coin. It's theoretical, and they started it out for $20 or $30 a Bitcoin, and as soon as they got momentum, other people wanted to buy it. There's a finite amount of Bitcoins, and if you wanted to get one, you had to buy it from somebody else that already had one. And if there were more, if there was more demand for those finite amount of Bitcoins that were in existence compared to the demand to buy them, the price was going to go up. Now, every time a Bitcoin is bought or sold, there's a mathematical algorithm that's floated around to verify and legitimize. That's what's called the blockchain. And that has to be legitimized by many computer geeks, let's call them, all over the world, who legitimize that the blockchain is correct and that this is a legitimate purchase to avoid anyone faking a Bitcoin being bought or sold to anyone. And so that's why there is a finite amount of them. And, you know, as it became popular, in the sense that you could use it to buy and sell things, or you could exchange it for value, more demand came into it, and then all of a sudden a mania took off in it, and that's why the price skyrocketed up. And in my opinion, the whole concept of cryptocurrencies comes down to one thing. How much of the criminal world is going to go to cryptocurrencies, and what's going to be their cryptocurrency of choice? Because the average person has no real benefit of wanting to own a cryptocurrency, because there is no...
So very few people accept it.
There's very few people accept it, and it has no real value. At least the U.S. dollar, it has its problems, but I have the full military of the United States, I have the full assets of the United States, and I have the full taxing authority of the United States. Bitcoin has nothing other than it is assured that if you buy a Bitcoin... that you got a legitimate Bitcoin, and that's the only thing going for it. We can talk more about it after the break, but right now, John, I got to run to traffic, and I'll be right back. We're on an open show tonight. You want to call in 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680, if you want to call in, ask your question. Take it away, traffic. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate. This is for business owners and presidents of companies listening today. If you have a 401k in your company, then let me warn you that lawyers are hunting for you with good reason. 401k plans with less than 1,000 employees have been built around revenue sharing, or in my words, commissions. The Department of Labor has opened a door for lawyers to sue you on behalf of employees unhappy with excessive fees in the plan. They are correct, but the funny thing is, the business owner has normally the majority of the money in the plan. You need a great plan for you and your employees, for everyone's retirement is dependent on it. We do a 401k review of your plan to help determine how to develop the best possible commission-free plan and keep the plan current. Call 410-823-SAVE, that's 410-823-SAVE, to schedule your 401k review. Everyone's retirement is dependent on it, so call 410-823-SAVE.
Simon and Garfunkel.
That's a good guess. Mary, Paul, and Frank.
Are you taping this? I need that.
What were their names?
That was the Birds, right?
See?
Yeah.
That was close.
Yeah, I got some help on that. But yeah, it's an old... I mean, you know the song, though. You've heard the song.
Yeah, it's something about a tambourine man.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go.
Right. The Birds. That's what I said. You just weren't listening.
I don't listen well sometimes.
We're here on an open show, 410-922-6680. If you want to call and ask your question, 410-922-6680. You can call and ask about anything, the new tax law, the old tax law, the in-between tax law, estate planning, insurances.
We could talk about what Maryland, what they're proposing to do with the Maryland impact of the federal rewrite of the tax plan. Have you read that?
No, not yet. But
you don't want to hear it.
We're gonna.
You don't really. Want
I can
to
only
hear it.
Imagine what they would do. You know, I mean, if I got off on those people down there, you know, I would probably be run out of the state by you know these. Anyway, Michael in Northwest Baltimore, Bitcoin. What's up there, buddy?
Yes, Drew and Giuseppe. I want to know the difference between cryptocurrency and fiat money. Which you yourself would rather have. How is it that the government is the only entity that can make counterfeit money and get away with it?
Well, I would personally prefer to have fiat currency because I have the taxing authority of the government and I have the military authority of the government and I have the assets of the government, even if they are indebted. I would rather have that. That's me personally. Now, you know, Bitcoin will work for certain people, just like gold and silver have been a favorite of a lot of people, and there's nothing wrong with that. And the person that got in early on Bitcoin's looking brilliant. And
sure.
You know, I hear what you're saying, Michael, and I have no problem with it whatsoever. And I've had clients that came in when Bitcoin was at 200, 500, 700, and I said, look, you know, you want to buy it, here's ways to do it. You can buy an ETF that owns Bitcoin, mm-hmm. GBTC.
Yep.
You can buy it directly yourself, go to one of these exchanges. You can go set up an IRA account and have them buy Bitcoin. That's been acceptable. It's, you know, considered acceptable. So, I have no problem with it, Michael. I just personally right now feel that the cryptocurrencies have gotten into a mania, and until that is worn off, you know, you should be very careful about buying into it.
Well, if you use the Road to Serfdom as a background.
I'm very familiar at Hayek, Friedrich Hayek, right, Chris?
Right. And yeah, use that as a backdrop to this.
I actually have a copy, an old copy of that book around my office somewhere, but yeah, as a backdrop.
Knowing what he says about money there, value, actual value of money, or the lack thereof.
But you know, wait a minute, Michael. Let me just give you one thing to think about. What is Bitcoin worth if dollars and other currencies aren't worth anything? And the answer is nothing. It's not worth anything. How do you buy a Bitcoin? You buy it with dollars. You buy it with euros. And once you get it in there, how do you get it out? You buy it with dollars. You sell it and get dollars. You sell it and get euros and so forth. We should do a whole talk. I got to run, Michael. We should do a whole talk about the tax angle of Bitcoin and the negatives of using it to buy and sell things if you, you know, if you're making money and so forth. Steve in Pikesville, how can we help you?
Question about tax-managed mutual funds.
Sure.
Just wondering, at what point, how do you determine if it's worth the extra cost to buy those as opposed to regular mutual funds?
Now, you're saying tax preference or tax-advantaged mutual funds?
Yeah, they're supposed to lower the taxes.
Yeah, so it depends on which ones you're talking about. Usually the easiest way to go with a tax-advantaged mutual fund, Steve, is just buy a good index fund because index funds are dirt cheap and they're always tax-advantaged funds. Right. Usually the only thing an index fund will make you pay taxes on at the end
dividends.
Of the year is the dividends and maybe a few stocks that are, you know, taken in and out of the index, but for the most part, index funds are the most tax-advantaged mutual funds to buy. So I'm not sure which ones you're talking about. I wouldn't buy anything other than index funds if I want my most tax-advantaged types of funds. All right?
Yes, I was looking at Vanguard. They have an S&P 500 index fund, and they have a tax-managed one that seems to be basically the same thing, it's just they call it tax managed.
Yeah, so what they're doing, it just depends, as to which are. So some of them can do actually, they can pull stocks out and in and out of the index without actually causing a tax consequence in the fund. And so that's what that's what they're trying to do. And, you know, is it worth, you know, another two bips, 2.02% is probably about all extra I would pay for something like that. All right?
Okay, great.
All right, Steve, take care. Good question, though.
Yeah.
Leo in Cadenceville, what's up?
Good evening. Thanks for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
That Dalbar study that says that mutual fund holders don't get the returns. You know, the mutual funds have higher returns than the mutual fund holders actually get.
Yeah, well,
that's familiar with it.
I'm not familiar with which one you're specifically referring
to. That was out probably about 8 or 9 years ago.
Okay. And so,
well, it never made sense to me as to how a mutual fund could have returns that were greater than what the mutual fund holders were receiving.
So, you know, without actually seeing the report, I mean, you know, you obviously have the fees in there. So if the fund makes 10 and they have fees
of... They were talking about that because of the people moving in and out and other machinations, I guess, that the people weren't actually receiving the returns of the fund. And I was just wondering, well, where were the returns? Where were the returns going?
Again, I'd have to see the report. I'm not familiar with it that you're referring to.
Okay.
I mean, the only thing I could think of is if they were buying and selling, they're paying commissions to buy and sell in and out. And so even though they might make 10% on the appreciation of the stock after they take the commission in, the commission out, they lose a quarter or half a percent. You know, also when you trade stocks, depending on what market index it's, what exchange it's on, you might have to give up some money to buy and sell it. You know, so there's lots of things that I could think of.
Yeah, it wasn't.
But I'd have to see the report if you want to.
It wasn't an arithmetic thing. It was, okay. All right, thanks.
All right. Sorry, I can't help you. That's a unique one. I know Dalbar does a lot of interesting studies. But I wouldn't be surprised that they're right on what they're saying. Let's go to Al in Perry Hall. Al, how can we help you?
Hey, before you can help me, the Birds, that was a guitar school for some great guitarists, right?
Who's that?
The Birds.
The Birds?
Oh, yeah, that band was Guitar School.
Oh, really?
For great guitarists like Eric Clapton, et cetera.
Oh, you're...
But that's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, I don't know anything about music, obviously, Al, so
he doesn't care to.
That's a cool running gag. I keep it up. I love it.
All right, go ahead, Al.
Real estate. You see some TV financial advisors saying investing in real estate or at least purchasing your primary residence is... It's over. It's not an investment anymore. What do you think about that?
Do I think real estate's still a good investment or what?
Sue Zorman says don't buy, just rent.
Well, I would disagree, and it depends. It depends on what do you intend to do. Do you intend to stay there for a long period of time? Do you intend to move? Why do you feel that you've got a good price? Why do you feel more people are going to move into the area that you're in and want to pay more for real estate? So, anybody who says carte blanche that you shouldn't rent, I mean, you shouldn't buy, you should rent, or if somebody says you should only buy and you should never rent, they're wrong. You know, it depends. That's what it always comes down to. What are your goals and objectives? What's the house like that you want to buy? Why should I expect more people to move into the area, et cetera, et cetera? I mean, these are all the things that you have to think about. But I just would disagree. I encourage all my clients to buy. And with this new tax law, it really doesn't change the equation much, in my opinion. But you do have to do the analysis to determine, is it going to be worth buying versus renting on the new tax law? And that's going to come down to lots of different factors. So,
well,
I mean, you know, the answer is, Al, it depends. I got to go to traffic unless you want to hold on a little. All right.
I'm good.
All right, buddy. Take care. And we're going to traffic. We'll be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. And then we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. Something happening here. This one I should definitely know.
Exactly.
There's
a man with a gun over there.
Maybe I ought to get that app where I put the music into it and it tells me what I'm listening.
Yeah, I know the song, but I wouldn't have gotten the group. Just this particular one, it's sure.
Buffalo Springfield, that's it.
There you go.
Now I just remembered. That was good, wasn't it? You didn't think I knew anything about music, did you?
No, I said you didn't care about music.
Anyway, we're on an open show, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. If you want to call and ask a question, anything you'd like to talk about, we're here on an open show. Leo, I hope you're out there still. My associate, Tom Bonvasuto.
Giuseppe. That's what he said. He called me Giuseppe.
Vincenzo Giuseppe Bonvasuto was listening, heard your question. He knew what you were talking about. I had no idea what you're talking about. But once he said it, I'm like, like, oh yeah, I had no idea what Leo was talking about. But so what he was saying is in the Dalbar's report 7 or 8 years ago or more, they basically were saying this, that people buy a mutual fund, the mutual fund will be up 10-15%, but the average investor didn't make 10 or 15%, may only made 4 or 5, or he lost money. And the reason was because a lot of people will buy and sell mutual funds like they're trading stocks or something, you know, instead of just buying a mutual fund and holding it for years and years and years on end. They're buying and selling the funds, and their timing is poor, and they're missing out on the big moves in it because, you know, people are short-term minded. They hear this is a great fund. They buy in, and all of a sudden the market's down for a month or two or three, and they lose 2 or 3%, and they say, this is a horrible fund. I don't want to own this anymore. And then they sell it, and next thing you know, the next 7 months of the year it goes up 18%, and they have a positive 15% rate of return for the year, but the average mutual fund shareholder missed it because they sold well before the fund did what it did. And so the concept Dalbar was talking about was holding good funds for the long term. Anyway, we're going to Ron in Baltimore City. How can we help you?
Hi, Drew. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've lived in Maryland my entire adult life, so I don't know what happens if I should move from Maryland and possibly have a home, say, in Florida and also one in Maryland. How does my Maryland income tax work?
Well, you can't just easily do that. You've got to make sure you do it in a way that you actually change your domicile, Ron, to another state. Now, changing your domicile is all about a heart issue. In other words, you have to change where your heart is from Baltimore or Maryland to wherever, be it Florida or somewhere else. Now,
driver's license.
Yeah, but the problem is that the government can't get into your heart to figure out where your heart is, so they use circumstantial things like where's your driver's license, where do you register your cars, where do you spend the majority of your time,
where do you vote,
where's your income tax return
filed,
where does your dog reside, believe it or not, was a major indictment of somebody in New York who tried to move his residency to Texas, but he didn't move his dog to Texas until 8 months after he moved, and he's...
This business about 6 months and a day, that's not really accurate.
That's not 100% accurate, absolutely. Don't go by that, but it is a part of
indicator.
Sure.
Yep.
The real key here, Ron, is before you do anything, you have to decide why are you moving, number one, and where is the best state for you? Because people who make under $100,000 ought to move to Delaware or Georgia because you're going to walk away with a better economic benefit in those states.
You should say that because I'm 67, and I have a pretty good amount of money in my IRAs, so we're going to have to start making withdrawals in a few years. And that's my major concern. And of course, I mentioned Florida. I happen to have family down there, but I also know they have no state income tax. I've also looked at Pennsylvania, where they don't tax most retirement income, including the
IRAs and 401ks.
Including IRA withdrawal. But I went on the website for Delaware because my daughter has a place in Delaware, and I considered, you know, moving close to her down there.
See, let me explain, Ron. Let me explain. There are three things that you need to consider when you're looking at moving. One is property taxes. One is sales taxes. And the third one is income taxes. You'll be surprised that in Maryland, if you make less than $50,000, you're probably not going to pay much in Maryland income taxes, but you're going to get clobbered in Maryland property taxes, Maryland sales taxes, and all kinds of other things. Where Delaware benefits you is you have no sales tax and you have very little property tax after you've lived there a year or two. And Pennsylvania is going to clobber you with school taxes and property taxes and sales taxes.
I'm looking at maybe $50,000 a year, in IRA withdrawals.
Okay, but what other income do you have other than Social Security?
I've got two civil service pensions.
So what do you think your overall income is going to be, over $100,000?
Well, with the IRA withdrawal, it's well over.
Well over $100,000. Then Tennessee, Georgia, Florida. Those are the types of states that you'd want to think about if you want to stay on the East Coast.
So, but I just wanted, my real question was, I've heard this 6 months and a day business. That's BS.
That alone doesn't do it.
That alone does not do it. Be careful with that. And, you know, a lot of people try to fake it. And, you know, Maryland will look at the GPS of your cell phone. They'll look at your credit cards and where your credit card charges are going.
Yeah. So, now, one last question, if I might. I did look at my Maryland income tax booklet, and it seemed to be saying that if you move in the middle of the year, you have to prorate your time spent in Maryland in determining your Maryland income tax.
Absolutely.
That's
called a part-year resident. That's absolute. Okay. It's an absolute thing you got to be prepared for, that you can't just go in July.
So that's the year that you move. But once you move to Florida, for instance, and you come back to Maryland and spend maybe 3 months in Maryland, what is your tax liability in Maryland?
Nothing, as long as your domicile, your heart, moved to your new home.
Okay, you've answered my question.
All right, buddy. You take care. Yeah, you know, Chris, they use a lot of things. You know, we talked about the dog. We had another one where the people
Know about the GPS, though.
Yeah, the people, you left all their pictures, all their family memorabilia, everything they left up here in Maryland, and they moved to Florida and tried to claim Florida as their residency. They still their main church was here in Maryland, their main country club, all their doctors were still here in Maryland, and Maryland socked it to them and said, you know, I don't care if you were there 6 months and a day, you're still a Marylander. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you also have things like, it's not just 6 months and a day. What if you travel around the world for 3 months of every year, and you're in Florida then for 4 months, and you're in Maryland for what's left there? That would be 5 months left in Maryland, so that doesn't work. Let's say you're 6 months in Florida. Let's say you're 5 months in Florida. You're traveling 4 months of the year, and you're back in Maryland for 2 or 3 months. So, you know, you could easily argue that. Usually best to just, you know, make sure your heart moves. That's the key. And it's not difficult when these guys drive you out of town. Hear that, Maryland legislature? You're driving people out of the state. And I love the liberals who get on the air and say, taxes don't drive people. We've actually had an increase in the state of Maryland. Well, you come to my office, there's a Hyperloop going to Delaware and Florida.
Yeah,
you know? And I'm not
you.
Telling them to go there. They're coming in asking me how to get the heck out of this state. Anyway, we got to go to traffic. We're going to be right back. Money, Ridge, and Wealth, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask a question before we finish tonight, take it away, traffic. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate. Many of you listened to our show for years and thought about coming to meet with us. With every financial physical I do, I wish you would not wait any longer. The mistakes I consistently see are frustrating. I make this offer. Just do a financial physical, and we'll do the complete analysis in 2 meetings, and you get to go home with the full plan to determine if the physical was worth the cost. If not, absolutely no charge. We do not sell products. We are comprehensive advisors. If your personal finances are in good shape and we add no value, then the financial physical is free. Do not wait. Get a second opinion and just do a financial physical. I am confident you are going to experience something unique and change your tax plan, your retirement plan, your investments, and much more. Call 410-823-SAVE, 410-823-SAVE to schedule your physical, or go online to DrewTig.com. That's DrewTig.com. This one I know. I can name this tune.
Just saying that, I know you don't.
Yeah, it's Simon and Garfunkel again.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh. I really should.
Why should you?
I'm terrible for laughing.
But that is who it is.
It is Simon and Garfunkel.
It's at least one of them. It's either Simon or Garfunkel.
No.
Or it's both.
It would be.
Is it Mary Paul and Frank again?
It would be Julio in the back. Me and Julio down by the schoolyard if it were Paul Simon. That's Crosby, Stills, and Nash or Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. I don't know which version that is.
What's the difference?
It's Nash. It doesn't have Young.
Well, you know, what's the difference?
Between them and Simon and Garfunkel?
Or Mary Paul and Frank. Anyway.
Do we have any callers?
No. I think we scared them off. Anyway, 410-922-6680 if you want to call and ask a question on a topic.
I have something for you. Just, I don't want to incite you. but at least pass along. Now,
yeah,
the
good thing is we have
Larry Hogan as the governor. He says he's not going to release his plan, but the Democrat plan that they talked about, as the Sun paper reported, I don't know how accurate it is, but they said there's three main points. One of them is to decouple the federal estate tax coupling that just happened.
The idiots down in, you know, there were people leaving the states in droves because of the estate tax. They stopped because they changed the law back that in 2019 there will be no Maryland estate tax other than coupled with the Fed.
Right.
And so if you pay estate tax, you'll give some to the Fed and some to the state, which is perfectly logical and legitimate. I have no problem with that if the Fed's stupid enough to have an estate tax. But what's the second stupid thing they want to do?
They want to do what California is doing with the charitable fund. You know, you pay into the fund and you get credit for that.
I just hope Trump and them stomp on these guys for that kind of idea, because that's just going to screw our country up. You know, that kind of tax, that kind of talk is just going to screw our country up. But go ahead. What's the third stupid thing?
Third one's not bad. They're talking about just allowing for personal exemptions still.
Personal exemptions. Well, we do have personal.
Right.
Maryland's always had personal exemptions as long as your income's not over certain breakpoints.
Yeah.
But
so,
what about
but
the,
there's
you
other
know,
things.
But
we got to flesh out the rest of it later. But the big thing, you know, the Maryland estate tax. But the bigger thing is this nonsensical idea about the charitable fund. You pay that, you get credit, and then you get to deduct it on your taxes because it's not really state taxes; it's something else.
But you know the big
you talk about
the
where's
big
your heart
point
where
in
substance over form.
The big point with Maryland that these legislatures need to think about, and every Marylander should be hounding their legislatures, and this is it. And that is, if you don't itemize on your federal return,
right,
you cannot itemize on your state return. Now, the Fed is increasing the standard deduction up to 12,000 single.
And if it goes from 70% people that are doing standard to 95%, which some people believe.
Which, yeah, they're saying that less than 5%. And I believe it, because every tax return I've looked at with a client, it seems like they're not going to itemize their return federally anymore. And that means with Maryland, you're going down to the Maryland standard deduction. Now, if in the past you used to itemize federal, you likely had $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 worth of Maryland itemized deductions. The standard deduction in Maryland is only $2,000, which means that if you got to use the standard deduction for the Fed, either as a single person or a married couple, you're getting $12,000 to $24,000 on the federal return, and then all of a sudden you're going to poop over to the Maryland return. You're going to drop down to $2,000. You're going to get the shaft. You're going to get it hard, too. As compared to last year, 2017, you're going to get $12,000, $13,000, $14,000, $15,000 itemized deductions because you probably itemized on your federal return. This is going to be a disaster for a lot of Marylanders, and they don't seem to care, because I'm not hearing anything about them saying, we're going to change it, that if you itemize, you can either itemize or go standard deduction with Maryland, end of the story. That's what they ought to do.
You would have thought that would have been one of the major considerations.
It's a simple thing.
When they think about it, here's the architecture of what we're looking at in the reconsidering, but they say they're looking at the full impact.
Oh, they're not looking. They don't care. All they care about is
what keeps
them in power. That's the only thing they care about.
Yeah. Well, you know that they're going to do. They're going to balance between to keep the most amount of money that they think is politically feasible.
Let me put it this way. The estate tax is the most evil tax that has ever been created by mankind. I have never heard a single legitimate reason for an estate tax.
And the legislature that was quoted said, hey, but we need that revenue.
There is no revenue.
We need that revenue.
There is no revenue.
Right.
You go and look, and the revenue generated by the estate tax is less than 1% of any government's income.
Yeah, I don't understand.
1%. It's like, we need that revenue. That's garbage. That is unconditional garbage.
It's a political ploy.
Let's look
to say
at
that
it.
They're fighting against the 1%.
You ought to get these legislators come up to my office and meet with widows and widowers when they're grieving over the loss of their spouse, and they've got to sit there and talk about, well, if we do this, you're going to have to pay $100,000 or $1 million or whatever, and if you do this, and you know, we got to do this, and we got to think about this, or talk to couples when we're doing their estate plan. We say, well, you know, if your children are going to lose $550,000, and they're in shock. They're like, you're kidding me, you know, really. And
well, the good thing is it has risen to the level where it is, because you go back a few years ago where it was,
it should be non-existent.
More and more people. I understand.
And it shouldn't hit anyone. I don't care how much money they've accumulated.
Right.
And because, you know, they always say, well, we can't allow dynasties to be created, you know, these family dynasties where they get all this money just because their DNA, as Warren Buffett says, they won the DNA lottery. You know, that's ridiculous. History has shown that the wealth coming from, like, the Colgates and the DuPonts and the Coca-Cola family and so forth, that many of those families are impoverished after years and years. There are many of them still very wealthy, but there's still many of them that are impoverished, that they've ended up in oblivion. Their children wasted the money, they blew it or whatever. And so you don't end up finding these.
I tell you, I wouldn't wish that on anybody.
No.
Because the children to have, you know, worth all that kind of money.
Yeah, it's got to be very carefully orchestrated with the family as to how you give it to them and how much you give to them and so forth. But it's totally irrelevant. If the money was earned legitimately, there is absolutely no legitimate reason, after you tax the living heck out of people all their life, that they can come up with any legitimate reason for the estate tax. And so for the Maryland legislature to even bring it up is an insult to the state that we live in. It's a great state, but it's a bunch of horrible legislatures that run it.
Well, anytime you get one-party rule for as long as it's been in force.
And I hope the people rile up not only did they rile up and bring Larry in, and he's done a superb job. You know, and I hope to God that the people of Maryland realize what a fantastic governor Larry Hogan has been. But I also hope they rile up and throw the Democrats out of office. I don't necessarily want Republicans in there either.
Not one party rule.
They're horrible also, you know.
Tell us what you really think.
I think it should be some kind of fair balance like we had in the past, where we have senators that are Republicans, let's say, and Democrats run the House and the Senate is run by Republicans, and you have a Republican governor some years and a Democratic governor other years. That's the best.
You just need to get them out of office every few years. You really just have to, because the longer they're in power, the more it's just going to get twisted up.
Yeah, and you get these long-term politicians. That's the worst of them all, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's quite a few of those down there in Washington. I mean, in Annapolis, you know? That's where they are.
Both places.
Anyway, we're out of time. Go to Financial Consulate at Facebook. The homepage of Financial Consulate on Facebook, if you want to sign up for our tech seminar. That's a lunchtime webinar that we're going to do on tech and how to use technology to improve your personal financial well-being.
And next week?
Data points? Data points. We're talking about ways to change your psychological thinking to make yourself financially successful. So we're going to be here with Graham and Robert next week. Anyways, Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.